Today is Thursday, May 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, the Trump administration rejects efforts by House Democrats to further investigate the president, a move not well received by them.
House Democrats are flat out calling this a constitutional crisis.
Also, the United States on Wednesday ordered all non-essential government staff to leave Iraq. And we learn why researchers are adding garbage to their dirt as a way to keep it healthy. These stories and more are ahead on today's International Edition. The White House sharply escalated its resistance to congressional attempts to investigate President Donald Trump. The AP's Washington correspondent Sagar Magani has this update.
In a letter to the House Judiciary Committee, counsel Pat Cipollone's rejecting the panel's sweeping document requests. He's suggesting Democrats are seeking a do-over of the special counsel's Russia probe and wonders whether the House investigation is a legitimate exercise of Congress's oversight authority. The panel's voted to hold Attorney General William Barr in contempt of Congress for refusing a subpoena to provide the special counsel's entire unredacted report. Cipollone says the White House will resist the panel's overbroad demands. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Now, to get more of an understanding of the current standoff between the House Democrats and the Trump White House, I spoke with VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. White House counsel Pat Cipollone characterizes these congressional investigations as a form of harassment of the president.
Right.
And has called for them to end. That is the Trump administration's side of the argument. What are House Democrats saying?
House Democrats are flat out calling this a constitutional crisis. They are saying that they are the people's house, that they are the branch of government that has been set up to provide oversight of the executive branch, and that this is their right on behalf of the American people.
And not only that, because in the United States, we have three co-equal branches of government with a series of checks and balances. And that's some Democrats say that is why you have a House Oversight Committee.
Exactly. And as you often hear up on Capitol Hill, the U.S. House of Representatives is the people's house, meaning that those lawmakers are up on Capitol Hill as representatives of American voters.
So what are the next steps for House Democrats? Because this is pretty much the White House saying we are not going to comply with an evidentiary request. They've already said they aren't going to answer to subpoenas. So what can they do next?
Right. That's a great question, one that we're all asking up on Capitol Hill. And one that was asked of House Democratic Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, who's kind of the number two to Nancy Pelosi. We asked him what is going to happen next in terms of voting, the House voting, to hold all of these different administration individuals in contempt. Now, Hoyer didn't say that that vote had been scheduled yet. He said that what Democrats wanted to do were to gather together the work of the six different House committees that are working on different aspects of congressional oversight of the Trump administration and, in a sense, get all of their documents in order to see all of the different issues of contempt that they were dealing with. Then they would hold a full House-wide vote.
Okay, so we're talking about the White House. We're talking about House Democrats. The other major party in American politics are Republicans, and there are Republicans in the People's House. What's their reaction been?
They're saying that this is flat out partisan hunting for information that will help Democrats win the 2020 election. They're saying that it's all about winning the next election that's coming up in this country and hunting for whatever dirt or smears they can put against President Trump.
Is there anything to that? Because as you mentioned, the People's House, the House of Representatives, has to refill all the seats every 2 years, unlike the Senate, which is every 6 years. So every 2 years, there is an election cycle for the House. Is this really playing into the election?
Well, it really depends on what voters, how much appetite voters have for the talk of impeachment, the talk of constitutional crisis. And what's interesting is that I was out interviewing people yesterday for a story about a constitutional crisis and whether people really feel here in the United States that we're in one or not.
But what are they saying?
A lot of people said, you know, we're in a crisis of some kind. But they didn't think that we had reached the level of a constitutional crisis yet. And that jives really with what legal scholars have been telling me. They're saying that the next step would be for this issue to go to the U.S. courts. If the courts order the Trump administration to obey those subpoenas, and then the Trump administration ignores those subpoenas, then we really, truly are in a constitutional crisis and in a spot where we've never been before.
And speaking to those experts, we mentioned the three branches of government. The judiciary is the third one who evidently will become involved in this process. And then you really have to say everybody is involved at that point.
That's right. Everybody has gotten involved in this. We just haven't seen the judiciary step in and weigh in on all of this quite yet.
Anything else you want to add?
This is going to be a really interesting battle to watch play out. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has had to walk a very fine line in terms of helping those committees, helping her people enforce those subpoenas, but not overplaying her hand on impeachment, which she probably feels is a little too much at this point and could possibly risk the Democrats losing the 2020 elections.
Because we should be clear, in the United States, when you talk about impeaching a president, the impeachment articles are presented in the House, which the Democrats have. But then the trial itself, if a president were to be removed from office, that takes place in the Senate, and that's not where the Democrats have power.
That's absolutely right. And really, any impeachment in the House of Representatives will tear the country apart. And that is something that you really have to think through very carefully before you put a country through that kind of battle.
That was VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. The United States on Wednesday ordered all non-essential government staff to leave Iraq. And after that, Germany and the Netherlands both suspended their military assistance programs in that country. It is the latest sign of tensions sweeping the Persian Gulf region over still unspecified threats that the Trump administration says are linked to Iran. Recent days have also seen allegations of sabotage targeting oil tankers off the coast of the United Arab Emirates, a drone attack by Yemen's Iranian-allied Houthi rebels, and the dispatch of a U.S. warship and bombers to the region. At the root of this appears to be President Donald Trump's decision a year ago to pull the U.S. from Iran's nuclear deal with world powers, embarking on a maximalist sanction campaign with Tehran. In response, Iran's supreme leader issued a veiled threat on Tuesday, saying it wouldn't be difficult for the Islamic Republic to enrich uranium to weapons-grade levels. And to get a bigger picture, International Edition's Kim Lewis spoke earlier with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb.
Are tensions continuing to rise in Iran?
What we're seeing is, yes, they are continuing to rise. Let me just tell you about what I've heard the threat entail. So according to U.S. officials, part of the threat at least is the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps of Iran had been putting missiles, ballistic missiles, onto some boats. And the thought was that they were going to target American troops. That's what we're hearing at the Pentagon. We are waiting for more. We go, well, show me what you're talking about. And they have yet to provide us some evidence for this threat, but we are pursuing that every day. But at the Pentagon, people are on high alert. Everyone that I speak to seems to think that the threat is credible, it is real, and there are several planning operations going on, planning everything from what you heard in the New York Times report of, tens of thousands of troops preparing to go to the Middle East, to something smaller on how do you respond to potential sabotage like we've seen happening with the UAE.
Also, what are other countries saying about this situation?
Well, I mean, it depends on the countries. Germany, for example, has been scaling back operations in Iraq. If you read between the lines there, it looks like they've seen the United States intelligence. They don't have intelligence of their own, but they're following based on United States intelligence. Then you look at what Spain has done. The U.S. sent a carrier strike group, the USS Abraham Lincoln. That carrier strike group also included a Spanish frigate. But Spain announced that they are pulling out their Spanish frigate because the Spanish frigate was just going to be training with the carrier strike group, and with the potential thought of a conflict with Iran, they don't want any part of that.
Interesting. And also, President Trump, he is rejecting the notion of that he is sending 120,000 troops to the Middle East, to that region. So Why? Where did this come from that he was going to do this?
Well, it's interesting because after he rejected it, he said, if I were to send troops, I would send a lot more. So it's where the New York Times says it's getting its reporting is from officials who had planned out different options. It's quite possible the president had not seen these options. That's completely a possibility. And it's very possible that that option will never happen as well. But the Pentagon prepares for everything. I can't stress that enough. But there are already a lot of United States troops around Iran. If you think about all the bases that it has across the Middle East and all the power that it has in the seas, there are anywhere between 60,000 and 80,000 sailors, airmen, Marines, and soldiers that we have surrounding Iran.
Also, are you hearing anything on the other side? Like, what is Iran saying about this? Are you getting anything?
Well, Iran is stressing that this is the United States escalating tensions. I think they tried to say it was fake intelligence or something similar to the rhetoric that President Trump would use. But other than that, they're remaining quiet, and the United States is steadily building up its presence there. No actions. Let's be very clear. The United States hasn't targeted Iran in any way, but I think that the military is preparing itself should the need for options occur.
That was VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb speaking with International Edition's Kim Lewis. Here are some other major stories from around the globe. At least 9 people were wounded on Wednesday when Sudanese forces used live ammunition to clear demonstrators from central Khartoum. Mexico's government ordered schools in and around Mexico City to be closed on Thursday in an extraordinary step taken due to elevated levels of pollution in the smog-encapsulated capital. And U.S. President Donald Trump said he will meet with South Korean President Moon Jae-in following June's G20 summit in Japan to discuss ongoing efforts to denuclearize North Korea. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile application. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists have recently been able to gain some insight into the creation of Neptune's tiniest moon, Hipparcos, thanks to observations made with the NASA ESA Hubble Space Telescope. Hipparcos, which has a diameter of only 34 kilometers, was discovered in 2013 after scientists analyzed Hubble-captured images of Neptune. The scientists theorize that Hipparcos is actually a fragment of a close neighboring moon, Proteus, after a comet impacted it billions of years ago. Photos taken in 1989 by NASA's Voyager 2 spacecraft show a huge impact crater on Proteus that scientists say is large enough that could have caused the moon to shatter. The tiny moon orbits Neptune at a distance of about 105,000 kilometers and is within only 12,000 kilometers of Proteus. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. U.S. President Donald Trump issued an executive order on Wednesday to help protect the United States against foreign adversaries that are taking advantage of technological vulnerabilities to threaten U.S. communication systems. The order, which declared a national emergency in response to the threat, does not name specific countries or companies, but it appears to target Chinese tech giant Huawei, the world's biggest supplier of network gear used by phone and internet companies. Huawei has long been seen as a front for spying by the Chinese military or security services, but the company has denied those allegations. In addition, the Bureau of Industry and Security of the U.S. Department of Commerce announced that it will be adding Huawei Technologies and its affiliates to the Bureau's entity list. This action stems from information available to the department that provides a reasonable basis to conclude that Huawei is engaged in activities that are contrary to U.S. national security or foreign policy interests. Now, to learn more about how Huawei is pushing back against these allegations, I spoke earlier with VOA Beijing Bureau Chief Bill Ide. So this executive order is coming down as nations begin developing and rolling out 5G mobile networks. What exactly is their underlying concern by the Trump administration as it regards to Huawei?
Well, Huawei has long been a concern of the U.S. government. It's long been on its radar. But the main argument that the Trump administration is making is that the equipment that Huawei builds, which is going to be key in kind of building this backbone of this new infrastructure for 5G, could allow for spying, allow the Chinese government to spy on other countries where this equipment is installed. Huawei has repeatedly denied that, you know, this is possible, that it would do this, that it would allow that to happen. But this is the message that the Trump administration has been really working on over the past year, and it's kind of culminated now with this executive order. You know, it really, the order itself formalizes what already, a ban that was already, you know, essentially in place, that, that carriers in the U.S. are not going to work together with Huawei to build up their 5G networks.
So how does this executive order and the notion that U.S. carriers aren't going to work with a company like Huawei to build their 5G networks, how does this EO affect them?
Well, essentially, it's not going to have any effect on them because they're already not working with Huawei. They're working with the other two companies, Ericsson or Nokia, or the other two big companies out there that can build or are capable of building the equipment that's needed for these 5G networks. So it's not going to really change anything from that perspective. There is an interesting facet to this, though, that in addition to kind of formalizing this ban, the Commerce Department has listed 70 entities that are affiliated with Huawei, and this is going to impact their access to U.S. technology, that there's now going to be more scrutiny of their purchase of equipment than, you know, parts that would then be used or could be used in this equipment. So that, I think, is going to be a significant thing. At this point, I'm not very clear on how much, you know, Huawei relies on U.S. parts to build its equipment that's used in 5G networks. Will this be similar to the case that we saw with ZTE when the U.S. government banned or had a tightened scrutiny on their purchase of this is another Chinese telecom company when the U.S. government tightened controls on their purchase of U.S. Products. That had a huge impact, especially when it comes to semiconductor chips. So they were basically, the company really took a serious spill after that. So whether or not this will impact Huawei in different ways is still unclear.
You also mentioned that Huawei said that there's no way it would ever be using its technology to conduct spying operations in the United States or elsewhere. How is the company responding to those kinds of specific allegations to protect its global business?
Well, we recently had a chance to go visit Huawei's headquarters in the southern city of Shenzhen. Shenzhen is kind of been at the forefront of China's opening up to the global economy over the past three decades or more. And when we visited there, one of the things that they were stressing was that the company itself has taken, you know, huge measures to protect the privacy and the data of its customers, and there's a message that has been kind of slowly coming out, but has really intensified in recent weeks and even on Tuesday, and that's that they're staking their entire business on this. They're saying that if they're violating customers' security, then their business has nowhere to go, and they'll be out of business. The company founder, Ren Zhengfei, a former military engineer, has said that if any country has asked Huawei to spy or they're forced to spy, that they would rather just get out of business than do that. Now, how one pulls that off is another question, but on Tuesday, the chairman, Liang Hua, also made remarks while he was visiting Britain, and which is another key area where Huawei is trying to roll out its 5G networks. And while he was there, he said that Huawei is willing also now to sign what he called no spy, no backdoor agreements, that it would basically pledge to not do this in writing.
That was VOA Beijing bureau chief Bill Ide. British Prime Minister Theresa May is trying to push her Brexit deal through Parliament for a fourth time, and those who plan to vote against it again are already stepping forward. Reuters' Lucy Fielder has that report.
And I think it is right that this government delivers on that choice and delivers Brexit.
It's the deal that won't go away. Theresa May will put her Brexit bill to Parliament again in early June, the one that's been rejected three times.
The Noes have it. The Noes have it.
It's just the withdrawal agreement, minus the political declaration on Britain's future ties with the European Union. But that's what she put to Parliament last time round. So what's changed? Well, the date that Britain has to leave, unless it revokes the Brexit clause and cancels the whole thing, has got that bit closer. It's this Halloween, and the EU warns it won't keep extending. The Prime Minister hopes she can deliver Brexit before lawmakers take their summer holiday. And pressure on May to quit is growing by the day. She's promised to do that if and when her Brexit deal is passed. Now many would-be successors in her Conservative Party are clamouring for her to set the date. But it's looking far from certain that Parliament will play ball this time. It's as divided over Brexit as the country at large. Already, a Eurosceptic bloc within her own Conservative Party is saying it'll vote against the bill, as is a small Northern Irish party May depends on for votes. Meanwhile, opposition Labour, which has been holding talks with the government to try to break the deadlock, will probably also vote against unless she makes significant changes to the deal.
There's been no big offer.
It's nearly 3 years since Britain's voted by a narrow margin to leave the EU, and opinions are hardening in Westminster and across the country. Brexiteers increasingly push for Britain to get out without any deal at all, while pressure grows on the opposition to endorse a second referendum on any Brexit deal.
And that was Reuters reporter Lucy Fielder. You're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, across the United States are numerous African diaspora associations. Many strive to preserve their culture or have advocacy goals. The role of the African diaspora in the United States.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA News Feeds. VOAnews.com.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. Soil gets tired as repeated farming slowly robs it of nutrients. And in the past, farmers would be forced to keep their fields empty for a season while the soil is recharged, or plant crops like peanuts that put nutrients back into the soil. But in the UK, researchers are adding garbage to their dirt as a way to keep it healthy. VOA's Kevin Enix reports that the project is an important one because so much of the world's topsoil is degraded.
Soil not only helps us grow crops, it holds onto carbon and filters water. But over time, soil gets tired and becomes ineffective at doing those things. The Fab Soil Project at the University of Plymouth in the UK is working on different ways to re-energize tired dirt.
We're trying to create a soil that performs even better than a natural soil because we can actually adapt its functions and the constituents of the soil, so that could have global opportunities for food security, for flood management, And we would like to think that people could take a soil like that and use it themselves and feeling that they're contributing to sustainability.
As part of their research, they're working with the Eden Project, a collection of biodomes meant to preserve exotic plants. It's a closed environment, so workers here have been making their own soil since the project began in 2000.
Across the entire site, our soil depth is about, well, no more than a metre anywhere across site. So it's quite amazing, really, that sort of artificial soil supports the plant life you see today at Eden.
The Eden Project and the Plymouth team are experimenting with adding all kinds of recyclable green waste into tired soil to get it back to work quicker.
The ability to be able to take a product that's a waste from one industry and actually turn it into a bespoke recipe soil for an area that requires restoration, either because it's a mine, same as Eden Project was, or other degradation that has occurred in that area, means that not only are you helping to restore that area, but you're also using a product that otherwise would be just going to landfill.
It's a 3-year project, and the hope is to create a soil that can be used to increase crop yields all over the world. And it can't come fast enough. The UN says about a third of the world's topsoil has been degraded through overuse. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Facebook said on Tuesday it was tightening rules around its live streaming feature ahead of a meeting of world leaders aimed at curbing online violence in the aftermath of the massacre in New Zealand. Reuters' Francesca Lanaw has the details.
Facebook has made a start with changes to their community rules around live streaming. And as I say, this is a first step as we look forward to further work to stop social media being perverted as a tool for terrorists.
New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern is cautiously praising Facebook's decision to tighten its rules around its live streaming feature. The social media giant announced on Tuesday the introduction of a one-strike policy for improper use of Facebook Live. Facebook's move was a response to the catastrophic attacks on mosques in Ardern's homeland 2 months ago, which saw the massacre of 51 people live-streamed on Facebook. 1.5 million versions of the video were removed in the first 24 hours following the shooting. On Wednesday, she arrived in Paris to discuss how to curb the spread of militant propaganda and violence on the internet with other world leaders. Ardern, who is chairing what's dubbed the Christchurch Cool Meeting along with French President Emmanuel Macron, said that today must be day one of change.
Today is the first day of the next 4 months. The Christchurch Call is a roadmap for action, and it is pleasing to see the statement from five major tech companies committing all of them to a set of individual actions and collaborative actions as well. This 9-point commitment will lead, I hope, and which is a first, to further change that, if successful, will help to eradicate terrorism from their platforms.
Facebook chief executive Mark Zuckerberg was not in attendance.
And that was Francesca Lanaw reporting from the Reuters news agency. A popular long-running chat show is being canceled following the death of one of its recent guests. The decision was made by the British broadcaster ITV, who runs the show daily on its channel. AP correspondent Karen Chamas has that story.
The Jeremy Kyle Show, known for being a tabloid-type show similar to the likes of American programs such as the Jerry Springer Show, had run for 14 years and was pulled after 63-year-old Steve Diamond was found dead at a home in Portsmouth, southern England, on the 9th of May. Media reported that he had killed himself. Police said the death was not suspicious and a post-mortem will be held to determine the cause. On an episode filmed earlier this month, Diamond took a lie detector test to convince his fiancée that he had not been unfaithful, but was told he had failed. Karen Chamas, London.
And that is going to do it for us today. On behalf of our director, Tracy Carter, and our amazing engineer, Greg Burns, thank you so much for joining us. Now, if you want to see some pictures, videos, stories, and more, be sure to follow the Voice of America on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, with our VOA mobile application, you can download our stories and take them with you. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a tremendous Thursday.
This is VOA News. I'm